Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 36 of Dogcast Radio. In this programme, we have a story written by a listener. The nine-month-old pup looked at us with kind and gentle eyes. Then she wheezed, coughed and jumped down from the van, wagging her tail. It was then that I stopped wondering how I was going to manage and just wondered why someone had done this to such a loving and trusting dog. In puppy playtime,
I'll be telling you how the season of Top Dog shows is here and how winter weather can be dangerous for dogs.
And we find out about the process that gets a dog from the point of arriving at a rescue shelter to the point where he or she is ready to be adopted. Before all that, though...
Hi, Dogcast Radio. My name is Mark, and I've got a question. And we're the proud owners of a 3.5-month-old black Labrador called Tess. But we've just got a question about the best ways to house train the puppy. If you've got any ideas on what's successful and, you know, what's the sort of easiest way to go about house training, I'd really appreciate hearing what advice you've got for me. Thanks a lot. We love the podcast. It's a great listen and keep it up.
Toilet training is an issue every dog owner has grappled with. Maybe you're one of those lucky people for whom it was a breeze. Great. But what was it you did that got the message across to your dog? I fall into the other category of people who have struggled with house training. It's been easier second time around, but probably just because I had more faith that one day it would happen right. If, like me, you struggled, what did you find worked well? And what did you find didn't work? If you have some advice that could help Mark and his dog, do let us know. Mark, the best of luck. If it's any comfort, I have an aunt who is now in her 80s and has had dogs all her life. She never actively house trains her dogs. She just clears away mistakes, and all her dogs have chosen to toilet outside. So to anyone having problems, the odds are stacked in your favour. It's just a case of persevering. For further help on the subject, you could check out episode 6 of Dogcast Radio, where Shirley Calstone has some excellent advice. It's a sad but well-established fact that the cute puppy bought as an ill-thought-out Christmas present can find himself homeless before Easter is even thought of. I spent a morning at an RSPCA shelter, seeing behind the scenes to find out the hard work that goes into finding those dogs a new home.
My name's Neil Richards, and I'm the kennel supervisor at the RSPCA's Gonsall Farm Animal Centre near Shrewsbury.
And we're going to sort of talk about the process that sees dogs come into the centre and what happens to them to get them to the point where they're available for rehoming.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Okay, so we're starting off in reception, and sort of what happens to them really initially when they come into the centre?
When the dogs first come into the centre, if the owner brings the dog in, we ask the owner to fill out a questionnaire, say what the dog's been like in its previous home. That can then give us a better idea of which home, what type of home we're looking for when it finally goes out. The dog's then booked into the animal centre itself, booked onto the centre's computer. The paperwork's filled out, and then the dog gets taken to the treatment room for initial health check by the staff.
Okay. So we'll move on to the treatment room then, shall we?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're in the treatment room now. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen to the dog once he's into the treatment room?
Once the dog's in the treatment room here, two members of the staff will go through, check the dog over, check its eyes, teeth, ears, pretty much everything really. We do quite a thorough health check. We take temperature, pulse rate, respiratory rate. After we've done all that, made any notes, if the dog needs to see the vet for anything, we'll then book it in for the next vet visit. The vet comes here twice a week. And then if need be, which is quite often, we'll start a vaccination course and give them a wormer and a D-flea. If the dog came in and it wasn't from the owner, we'd check for a microchip.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it wasn't chipped first as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that all goes on in here?
That all goes on in here, yeah. And we also weigh the dog as well. So we've got an idea of the weight when it first came in. That's handy in a couple of ways. One, because we can obviously work out the amount of food that we need to give it. But if a dog gets particularly stressed in kennels, then we've got a starting weight to go from. And we can see if it's got stressed or not by the weight as well.
Yeah.
If it's gradually losing weight.
Do you get many overweight dogs? Because there was one that hit the headlines, wasn't it? Rusty.
We do get quite a few, yeah. We do, if we get any overweight dogs in, we've got a light diet that we can use. Sometimes as well, the kennel stress doesn't unsettle them a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially if they've come from a home where they've been for most of their lives. Failing that, we've got special veterinary diets that we can put them on as well to lose the weight. And they get walked pretty much every day here as well.
Yeah, which helps.
Yeah, because we've got the staff and we've got volunteer dog walkers as well.
Yeah. So the treatment room is obviously something they come into early on, but it's something they come back to regularly.
They come back regularly because we weigh our dogs once a week.
Yeah.
Just to keep an eye on the weights.
Yeah.
And pretty much the only other time they would probably come in here is to see the vet. So it's not the best room for them.
No. we'll move on then, shall we?
Yeah, okay.
Now, obviously, before you put a dog up for adoption, there's a whole raft of checks. We've said the health checks that go on, but there's temperament checks, aren't there? So what happens then?
we put the dog down in the kennel, and for the next 10 full days, we'll note down how clean the dog's been in its kennel, if it's destructive at all, if the dog barks a lot, which some of them can do, and it can be very high-pitched and first thing in the morning. We also make a note of what they've done overnight.
Yes.
How good it is. And then we go on to the temperament as well. We note down whether they're timid, nervous, whether they're friendly, bold, aggressive or submissive. And then we also note how well they eat during the day as well.
Yeah.
So that goes on every day for the next 10 days. On the fifth day, we do a mini assessment on them. All that is just taking them out for a walk, see how they react on a lead, whether they're good on a lead or not. Try them with grooming, see how they react to the grooming. Touch all parts of the body, just make sure there's no parts of the body they don't like being touched on.
Yeah.
And just a basic temperament check.
Yeah.
The main assessment itself is on day 10. That's when we'll repeat what we've done on the fifth day. But the extra bit is we'll try them with other dogs.
Yeah.
And we'll try them with cats as well.
Yeah. Now, the bit that intrigues me that I'd like an answer on is I can see how you sort of test them with dogs and cats.
Yeah.
But
that
sort of
very interesting.
But, you know, a lot of your dogs sort of say either not suitable for homing with children, or they'll say, you know, children over 10 or whatever. Yeah. So how do you safely, without putting the children in danger, check how good they are with children?
It's very tricky. I mean, in this environment here anyway, we're in a false environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've got that for a start off. And yes, obviously, we haven't got children to try them with. A lot of it is down to the staff's experience. Staff are very experienced here with assessments. They know how the dogs are going to react, and they just get a feeling of what they're going to be like with children. I mean, if you've got, say we've got some collie pups in at the moment, they've been in kennels most of their lives. They're quite nervous, so we wouldn't put them with young children.
Yeah,
saying 10 plus at the moment. And if you've got a big boisterous dog, it might be the friendliest dog in the world, but if it's a big boisterous dog that's going to keep knocking kids over, then, you know, we wouldn't put them with young children again. And of course, I mean, if the dog's been brought in by the owner itself, if they've filled out the acceptance questionnaire, if it says that they've lived with children previously, we also ask what the behaviour was with children.
Yeah.
And then obviously we'll take that into account as well.
Yeah. Okay. So when you've done the assessment, what happens then?
What happens then is, after the member of staff submitting the assessment up, the manager will then have a read through it. And if they feel that the dog's suitable for rehoming, he'll sign, or he or she will sign the dog off for rehoming. Mm-hmm. At the centre here, we're part of the RSPCA's internet trial at the moment. Our centre and another centre, Block Fen in Cambridgeshire, where we can put all our dogs, well, all our animals on the internet for people to have a look at.
Yeah.
So as well as moving a dog down from the assessment block to the adoption block for the public to view, we'll put a card up outside the kennel saying what type of home we're looking for. As well as that, we can also take a photograph of them and put their details on the internet. Which, again, with some energetic dogs, can be very interesting when you try to take the photos.
Get some action shots.
Yeah, trying to get them to sit still. It's like, you think you've got the perfect shot and the camera's just a little bit too slow and the head's looking the other way.
Yeah, you've got the blur.
Yeah.
Get them asleep.
Yeah. And that's it, basically. I mean, if we've got any long-termer dogs, we can do a press appeal for them. The local press are very good with us for that. They're very helpful towards us. We're also quite fortunate in the fact that RSPCA have got a lot of centres throughout the country.
Yeah.
So we can also transfer to other centres. Benefit of that is sometimes a new environment helps the dog.
Yeah.
Different parts of the country do better with different dogs.
Yeah.
We don't do particularly well with staffies, but Birmingham do quite well with staffies and the likes of Liverpool. And we would probably tend to do better with the collies because we're out in the country rather than in the middle of town in some places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you find the Jack Russells go well, the Jack Russell Crosses go well here as well?
Generally, any small dog, El Gore, even if. I mean, even if it's an older dog, but say like a German Shepherd Cross or something like that, chances are that's going to take a while to get rehomed, and it might end up being transferred around and things like that. If you had a couple of old Yorkies or something like that, it goes straight away. Small dogs go a lot quicker than the bigger dogs, unless you have something like. A lab or something like that.
Is a popular breed. So people know what they're getting, don't they?
That's it.
You mentioned at the end of the 10-day assessment, sort of if they're passed as okay for adoption, what happens? What happens if they're not passed as okay?
There's a few things we can do. One of the reasons the dog wouldn't pass the assessment to start off with if it wasn't particularly good with other dogs, to the point where we felt that the dog couldn't be let off the lead with other dogs around it. We have managed to, in the past, socialise that particular dog with other dogs, and gradually over a couple of months or so, the dog's gotten better. We've done a reassessment, and this particular dog actually went out to a home with another dog. So that's
brilliant.
Worked. I mean, that's something you can get around. Something you can't really get around is full-on aggression. And if, say, a dog's bitten a member of staff previously, then we have to think seriously about rehoming that dog. Because as well as being here for the animals, we've also got a responsibility to the public as well. So we just can't rehome a dangerous dog.
No.
As simple as that. So unfortunately, it would have to be put to sleep. Probably the only other time we would go down that route of euthanasia would be following vet advice. For medical reasons.
But sort of really, it's on an individual basis, and if there's training or behavioural things that you can do,
it'll be done. Yeah, you can get around it. Like I say, with dog-to-dog aggression, you can, over time, start socialising with other dogs. Just walking them side by side with other dogs and just gradually getting them used to it.
Once the thorough assessments have been carried out and the dog finally makes it to the adoption kennels, what's life like then?
We're standing now by the adoption kennels. And Neil, how... Neil, how do dogs react to being in the kennels?
A lot of dogs Okay, some of the worst dogs to have in kennels are the collies.
Yeah.
Because they need lots of physical and mental stimulation, and unfortunately they don't get that in the kennels.
Yeah.
So they can get very stressed very quickly. You like see your labs and things like that tend to cope all right. And a lot of it obviously depends on the age as well.
Yeah.
The older the dog, the more kind of calm and relaxed it's going to be.
Yeah.
But there again, if they've... It's different dogs, different circumstances. If you've had a dog that's been with someone all alive, and unfortunately, if that owner's died or something, and they've come here, all of a sudden they're without the owner, and they can get very depressed.
Yeah.
They'll probably be off their food for a couple of days or something like that. So it's just a matter of the staff going in, just trying to perk them up, trying to give them some company. Greyhounds, lurchers tend to be quite good dogs in kennels, mainly because they're kind of my ideal dog, really, because a lot of greyhounds and lurchers will just sleep around the house all day.
They are very laid back, aren't they?
I mean, all they like to do is just to be let off the lead and have a race round and stretch the legs. And say most of the time they'll probably be lying around the house.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're generally fairly chill dogs, really.
They are, aren't they? They're a quick burst of energy and then it's okay, I'll veg out.
Yeah.
From the kennels, we move to what is probably the dog's favourite part of the shelter.
Now, a big part of a dog's life is food, isn't it? So we've come to the kitchen.
Yeah.
And what goes on here?
This is where we prepare all the feeds for the rest of the day and the following morning.
Mm-hmm.
We use a dry food, so we can prepare it for the rest of the day and the following morning. When the dog's first admitted, we take a weight off it, and that's how we... work out the amount of feed, obviously. And then, say, gradually, every week, we weigh the dogs weekly, and then we adjust the feeds accordingly. If a dog's getting particularly stressed and starting to lose weight, we've got two options. First one's upping the feed, or the second one is putting them onto a high-protein diet. Which we've got there, which works quite well.
Because there's actually lots of... I'm just looking at your board, which looks like an operation of war direction.
There's quite a few there, yeah. With regards to the times of the feeds, a lot of adult dogs, maybe in a home, you could feed them once a day. We feed them twice a day, just so gives them something else, breaks the day up. The younger pups... especially the young pups, we feed four times a day. When they get a bit older, we put it down to three. And then when they get to adult, it'll go down to two. The only other one, if we had any dogs in that were very, very underweight, to the point, where they're being starved, they'd start off on small feeds, little and often, on a sensitive diet. The product that we've got is... probably about the lightest diet you can get. And it's just basically getting the dog used to eating again. And then gradually we'll reduce a weight gain diet in.
And you've got one or two different kinds of food, haven't you?
We've got the light food, dry food, which also is classed as a senior as well. So we've got the sensitivity, which is for very thin dogs, or dogs that have lots of diarrhoea. They go on to that for 5 days. We've got the standard adult complete diet. You've got your puppy diet, your junior diet for slightly older puppies, and then we get your prescription diets. Let's say if a dog isn't losing weight on the light diet, first thing we'll do is put it onto a special weight reduction diet, and tend to do quite well on that one.
And sort of what enrichment can you do with the food?
Do quite a few things. I mean, you see some of the dogs here, and they'll tend to be the dogs that get very stressed, or either that or eat the food too quickly. We put them in a feed bowl. One of these things here. Basically, it's a plastic bowl, two holes in the top. You pop the dry food in, the dry kibble. If it's a lot of food, it takes quite a bit of time.
I was just thinking, you must be there all day, because I sometimes use that with my lab, and it takes ages
it
to
takes,
finish.
I mean, it's a good time for thinking. But, I mean, that just takes... It gives the dog something more to do when it's eating, and it also takes them longer to eat, so it just lasts that little bit longer. A couple of things... we also use as well. We've got the Kongs that we use. We tend to put like Marmite or something like that in there. So we don't. What we have to try and avoid is putting too much in there, because they're getting. Some dogs will be getting quite a lot of food already in the kennels just to try and keep the weight on. So obviously, if we start giving them lots and lots of treats and lots of Kongs, then they're just going to get diarrhea, and they're going to have to go onto the sensitive diet, and it gets a bit all. Gets a bit complicated. And then I mean, you can do things when you've got them out in the off lead area, just hide some food around and get them to search for it and things like that.
I suppose you know, again, it's something that your border collies and your more active perhaps
your gun dogs, that's what I was trying to think of. Gun dogs. I mean, with regards to gun dog breeds and shepherds, if we've got them at a certain age, we work quite closely with the animal defence unit at Melton Mowbray. And they take dogs on, obviously, to work in the forces. So for some dogs, it's a really good life, because it's, you know, it's a full-on active life. They're getting to do what they've been bred to do, and absolutely love it as well. And if the dog passes the assessment... and goes to into the forces, then we get a certificate back saying such and such has joined Her Majesty's forces.
It's quite a nice thing.
That
must be so satisfying, because I was having a look in the reception area at your files about, you know, the dogs and cats and guinea pigs and and rabbits that have found new homes. That must be so good to have that feedback.
It is, yeah. I mean, we do quite a few. I mean, people get a It's standard to get a home visit before they adopt a dog, but they'll also get a home visit 2 months after. But that's done by the home visitors. So they're a little bit separate from us, so we don't always get to hear about that. What we tend to do at the centre here, we give people a ring back 10 days after they adopted the dog. So we get a little idea of what how they're settling in. We get lots of letters and photos back, and people even bring their dogs back in to see us. And as well as that, every year, and it's usually the last Sunday in July, but this year it's on the 22nd of July, the third Sunday, we have a dog show and open day. So a lot of people bring their dogs back then to put them into dog shows for prettiest bitch, cutest eyes. I think we had one once best microchipped.
That's good.
It's, it's different.
It's encouraging a good thing.
It is,
it?
So far, so good. But now to the crux of the rescue problem at this time of year.
We're sort of early on in the year, just past Christmas. Now, there is a problem, isn't there, with people having dogs for Christmas, and then it's a whim buy, it's not the right thing for them, and there's problems. If someone's had a dog for Christmas and things aren't perhaps going, you know, really well, what help is available? What should they do?
There's various behaviourists around. And you know, you just have to look in the yellow pages, have a look at the behaviourists. If the dog isn't particularly settling down too well, one of the things we would say is to get your dog checked out by the vet first, just to make sure there's no vetting issue behind it. If the dog gets the okay from the vet, they ring round, try and find a local behaviourist. If not, give us a ring at the centre here, and we'll try and give some advice.
Or obviously their local shelter or rescue.
Any rescue shelter. We'll be giving advice.
So there is help out there.
There's plenty of help out there. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of help on the internet as well.
Okay, if someone's had a dog for Christmas and they now decide it was definitely a mistake, it was the wrong thing to do, what should they do with the dog?
If they contact any rescue centre, they'll try and take them in as soon as possible. And what you have to take into account is that there's a lot of unwanted dogs out there. So most animal centres, rescue centres, including ourselves, we've got a waiting list of dogs to come in. Fairly unlikely you're going to be able to get your dog in straight away. It's not just here, it's most rescue centres. I say there's a lot of unwanted dogs out there for one reason or another. We'll try and give you help in the meantime. We'll give you other numbers to try. If you put a card up in your local vets, if they'll let you do it, that's one way of doing it. At least then, rather than putting it in the paper saying free to a good home, you don't know who it's going to go to. At least if you put a card up in the vets, you've got some chance that the person's looking after their animals anyway, because they've gone to the vets in the first place.
But again, if you need to rehome the dog, there is help with it, isn't there?
There's lots of help, yeah. It's just a case of giving us a ring, and or giving, let's say, any animal shelter a ring, we'll try and help as much as we can.
Yeah, and I mean, there isn't... I mean, I think some people... There's a problem that they abandon the dog. Yeah. And I think part of that, there's a fear that if they come in and say, I don't want the dog, they're going to be told off or, you know... But it isn't like that, is it?
It's not like that, no, no. I mean, we're very friendly here. We're not going to bite people's heads off. No, it's not like that.
No. I think the thing is, you know... Persevere. You can fix it, can't you? You can get help.
A lot of problems you can get around. Yeah, it just takes a lot of time and patience.
But if it is broken, you don't want to, or you can't fix it, don't just abandon the dog.
Don't just abandon the dog. No, I mean, there's a chance that the dog, wherever you abandon it, if you tie it up to a post, it could slip the lead, get onto a busy main road, be knocked down. And all sorts of problems. You don't know how long the dog's going to be there. The dog might be frightened. Someone might go up to it because it's frightened. It might bite someone. And on top of all that, going back to the beginning, if you bring the dog into us yourself, then we can get as much information off you, the owner, about the dog as much as possible, which all leads to getting the dog into a better, more suitable home.
Yeah.
Please don't misunderstand any of my comments in that section. I am not advocating getting rid of your dog, and I believe that with a little effort, most dogs can become a joy to live with. But if anyone decides that they have made a mistake in bringing a dog into their life, and they can no longer live with that dog, the best course of action for the dog is for the person to contact their local shelter. Obviously, in an ideal world, the best course of action is only to get a dog if you can give it a home for life. But sadly, we don't live in an ideal world. The best part of the much-needed job charities like the RSPCA carry out is seeing the joy of an animal finding a new and loving home. Joy for the dog and the new family. Neil told me about one dog who needs a new home and is still waiting.
Now, I know usually it's black dogs that are sort of difficult to rehome. But you've got a white dog that's...
Yeah, I've got a white shepherd called China. She's just under 3.5 years old. Been in since October last year. She came in because unfortunately her owner fell ill. Couldn't look after her anymore. She does suffer a little bit from separation anxiety. She can be a bit of a handful, but she just needs a firm owner. Preferably someone who's had experienced shepherds before. Once she's actually quite well trained now, we had her out in the off-lead area. She'll run around and she'll come back to you straight away. She'll sit and stay and let you walk away until you call her back. So she's quite well trained now.
And is she suitable for homing with other dogs and children or not?
She's better with dogs now. She wasn't when she first came in, but she's another one of those where she's progressively getting better to the point where we can actually use her with some new dogs now to see what they're like with other dogs. Yeah, I'm saying not to go with cats. I'm saying good with dogs, but best as possibly best as an only dog in the house for the time being. I say this was on a first assessment. She is gradually getting better now. Good with teenagers plus. Because she can be very lively, very boisterous.
Yeah.
Been in since the 11th of October last year. And for one reason or another, she's not had a lot of interest. You know, a lot of people would think, a white shepherd, crikey.
Yeah.
Lots of people. But unfortunately not now.
If you'd like to find out more about China or any of the dogs at the Gonsall Farm RSPCA shelter, go to the RSPCA website and click on Rehoming, or use the link on the Dogcast site where there's also a photo of the beautiful white German Shepherd, China.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Michelle Muto enjoys listening to Dogcast and writing. She contacted us with a story about her rehoming experiences, and we thought it was so enchanting, we'd share it with you. Thief of Hearts by Michelle Muto. The last thing I needed was to foster a puppy. I already had a dog. My husband and I were working full-time jobs. He was going to night school, and my mother, who lived with us, needed care. None of that mattered when I got the call from the Akita Rescue Group. Without a foster home, a young female Akita was scheduled for euthanasia. All other foster homes were full. Another group member picked her up from the shelter and met my husband and me on that wintry February morning. She opened the crate and out popped a scrawny, dirty young dog. Her coat bared little resemblance to the white it should have been. It was brown beige at best, ratty and covered with grime. Every bone in her body showed. Her belly was raw, red and void of fur. The nine-month-old pup looked at us with kind and gentle eyes. Then she wheezed, coughed and jumped down from the van, wagging her tail. It was then that I stopped wondering how I was going to manage and just wondered why someone had done this to such a loving and trusting dog. I bent down next to the pup, giving her a hug despite the filth. Backyard breeder or puppy mill dumped her. Shelter has had her almost 2 weeks. She's fortunate, Cindy said. Yeah, I replied, looking at how impossibly thin she was. She's real lucky. We put the pup into the back of our SUV. I'll take care of you, little one, I said. She leaned her small head against me the entire drive home. I put our dog Jack in another room while I brought her inside. I didn't know if she had fleas or anything contagious. I fed her some of Jack's food, and she ate in small spurts, first gobbling the food, then pausing to pant heavily and cough. She sounded like she had a cold. We bathed her, which might have been her very first bath. She trembled, cried, and buried her head into our chests. We drowned fleas ourselves in the process. Afterwards, we decided to call her Tasha and took her to a pet supermarket for puppy food, a collar, and an ID tag. The next day, her coughing worsened and she wouldn't eat or drink. When Tasha sneezed, blood ran from her nose. We took her to the animal emergency clinic, where the vet diagnosed her with a terrible case of kennel cough. We took the crying, shivering pup home and gave her antibiotics. We quarantined her so Jack wouldn't get sick. It'd be weeks before she could be spayed, much less adopted, and a week before she could get her shots. So we rotated dogs in the house and the yard. Tasha wouldn't eat unless someone sat with her. We also discovered Tasha wasn't housebroken. But, regardless of all the problems, she was an exceptional dog, smart and willing to learn. Tasha learned to sit in one 20-minute training session. All she required was affection. We brought her outside with us while working in the backyard one afternoon. She followed us everywhere we went, finally falling asleep among some leaves. Seeing her face, peaceful, for the first time since we'd brought her home, I suddenly didn't care about a few accidents. I'd find time to train her. I dropped Tasha off at the vet clinic for her shots when she was well enough. I assured her I'd return and left to work, trying to ignore her cries. When I returned, she was ecstatic and happily jumped into the back of the SUV, ready to go home. We'll find you a good family, I told her. Until then, I'll take care of you. Again, she rested her head on my shoulder the whole way home. One night, Tasha sat and stared at me. Don't look at me like that, I warned. She came to me and rested her head in my lap. My heart skipped a few beats and sank warmly into my chest. Great, I said, petting her head. Now you've gone and done it. We're both getting attached. I bent down to hug her, and she showered my face with kisses. I already knew I'd miss her when she was gone. Tasha was an extrovert and had a real sense of humour. One evening, while Jack was outside and I was cooking dinner, she jumped the baby gate designed to keep her in the living room and bounded into the kitchen. We placed a second baby gate on top of the first. Tasha climbed to the top of a chair and tipped it so it had crashed through the gates. We moved the chairs away from the gates. Defeated, Tasha howled like her heart would break. All she wanted was to be at someone's side. Digging became Tasha's favourite outdoor pastime. She'd dig and root around with her nose until she was orange with clay. She was also a thief. She'd steal Jack's toys and anything else given half the chance. She wouldn't come when called, and games of chase me amused her. At last the time came for her and Jack to meet without gates or crates. We put them in the backyard together, with leashes to control them. This was the moment of truth. Jack was twice her weight. As they approached, I held my breath. If all went well, we'd adopt her. Jack wagged his tail and went to lick Tasha. Tasha lunged for Jack, and he fought her off. We separated them. Three more attempts ended the same way. "Sealed your fate, Tasha," I said as I brushed her that evening. "If you'd gotten along with Jack, this could have been your forever home." Tasha pawed at me and nibbled on the brush handle. We tried the neighbour's dogs over the next few days. Two Dachshunds and an Akita Border Collie mix. She tried to fight or dominate all of them. Painful as it was, I typed up the bio to accompany the picture for the rescue's webpage. It broke my heart that I'd have to give her up and never see her again. Over dinner, my mum and I picked at our food. I asked her how she felt about Tasha. "I love the squirt," she said. "She stole my heart." "Me too," I said sadly. "I hope she finds a home worthy of her. She deserves that much." I told myself Tasha could do better elsewhere. She couldn't be happy here in a crate without all the attention she deserved. This wasn't fair to either dog. Twice, Tasha became ill during the weeks that followed, postponing any adoptions. "Take her off the web page," Ray said one night. "You know you want to keep her." "She doesn't get along with Jack." It was true, but I wouldn't admit it. "Let's try it again. They'll work it out." "They'll fight," I replied. "No, they won't." Remembering the other meetings all too well, I put Tasha in her crate for the night and told her, "Get along with Jack, and you'll have a big brother to protect you and your forever home." The next night, we tried again. Tasha ran from the living room. Jack chased her. My heart pounded. Jack boxed her with his paws, and she boxed him. But it was in the spirit of play, not aggression. Was this the same little dog that fought Jack just weeks ago? They licked each other's muzzles. I couldn't believe it. Had Tasha somehow understood? "Take her off the web page," Ray repeated. "But what if I could find her a perfect home?" I asked. He smiled. "You already did." There were so many things for her to learn. Still undecided, I told her, "You'll have to learn on the fly, little one." So many things to learn. So many adjustments in such little time. And I knew she'd try her hardest. The next day, I read the email that said a family in another state was interested in Tasha. I hid in the ladies' room for 15 minutes to regain my composure. That night, I told Ray and Mum. Ray didn't say much. Mum's only reply was, "You'll do the right thing by her. I know you will." I want what is best for her, even if it isn't with us. The other family wanted a darker coloured dog. So Tasha stayed on the webpage, and with us. I worked hard to keep Jack and Tasha acquainted, spending hours with both of them. Tasha wanted to be included in whatever Jack was doing. Often, Tasha would nibble his ears, lick his face, or playfully grab at his back legs. Jack took it all in stride. "Well," I said to her one night while writing out bills, "you've gotten to Mum." Tasha looked up from her chew toy. "Then you got to Jack, and I still don't know how you did that." She wagged her tail. "Problem is, you've got to get to Ray, and he's no soft sell." She wagged her tail and went back to her toy. "You actually can tell me you can separate those two?" Ray asked one night as we watched them play. "You can tell me you want another dog?" I quipped. "One more isn't much different," he replied. "There's more hair to sweep up, more food to buy, twice the baths and vet bills. How about all the training she needs? Our bedroom is small. Where would we put another dog bed?" "Who are you trying to convince?" he asked. He was right, and I knew it. Later, I found him lying on the floor. Tasha snuggled up against him. "Nice work, Tasha," I said. "You're a real thief of hearts." When Tasha could be spayed, I took her to the vet. The tech slipped a simple rope lead over her neck. I removed her collar and leash. Tasha dropped her head and whimpered, pulling against the lead and burying her head against me. She thought I was abandoning her. She looked up at me with wide, frightened eyes. I choked back tears as they took her away. Just before they turned the corner and faded from sight, Tasha turned her head to look at me once more. I couldn't stop thinking about her that night. Twice I called to check on her. Sleep didn't come easy. I felt foolish for worrying so much. I realised I couldn't imagine her not living here with us. It was obvious she loved us, and we loved her. Somehow, we'd make it work. She deserved to know I'd always be there for her. We picked her up as early as possible. As she rounded the corner and saw me, her whole body wagged with joy. Despite the surgery, the painkillers, and the stitches that lined her belly, she tugged at the lead. I dropped to the floor to greet her, arms wide. She ran to me, showering my face with kisses. All was right again in her world. "See, I'd never leave you," I said as I hugged and kissed her. "Let's go home, Tasha. To your forever home. You've got one now. I'll take care of you always, little one." She looked up at me with those sweet brown eyes. "Forgive me, little one. Sorry it took so long to realise you were home all along." From those eyes, I could tell the apology wasn't necessary. For a warm, loving home, she would have forgiven anything. And that was Thief of Hearts by Michelle Muto. Michelle, thank you for the moving story, and thanks for the photo of beautiful angelic Tasha, which can be seen on the Dogcast site.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime! Hi, and welcome to puppy playtime. The season of Top Dog shows is upon us, with Crufts next month, but this month saw the 131st Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show in Madison Square Garden, New York. This is a champions-only dog show. 165 breeds and varieties divided into several groups were judged. You already know what a breed is, but a variety is a division of a breed based on the coat, colour or size. For an example, Cocker Spaniels have different varieties of colours. Dachshunds have a variety of coat length, and poodles vary in size. The seven groups were Working, which an Akita won, Terrier, which a Dandy Dinmont Terrier won, Toy, which was won by a Toy Poodle, and Non-Sporting, where a Standard Poodle took first prize. In the Hound group, a Putty Basset Griffin Von Dien was judged best, while a Bouvier de Flandre won the herding group. The winner of the sporting group was an English Springer Spaniel, who went on to be judged as best in show too. As well as the season for dog shows, it's also a time when a lot of us are suffering from the cold of winter. And for a dog recently, icy weather was a real problem. A dog in Colorado fell through ice into a pond and a fire crew had to rescue him. A brave fire officer wearing a protective suit swam out and the dog swam into his arms. Water can be dangerous enough for dogs anyway, as another dog near Brisbane, Australia, found out. Charlie fell into a pond and stopped breathing for several minutes and was only saved by his owner administering mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. After a night at the vet's, Charlie was good as new, but whether you're having summer or winter right now, make sure your dog is safe around water. Till next time, have fun with your dog and make sure your dog has fun with you.
If you're enjoying listening to Dogcast Radio, you may be interested to know that all the episodes are available for listen or download from our website, www.dogcastradio.com. We've recently caught up with the backlog of photos and comments you've been sending to our profile pages, so do check those out. And if there's a breed we haven't got that you'd like us to cover, let us know. If you're enjoying Dogcast, and even if you're not, it would be great if you could fill in the feedback survey on the Dogcast site. Go to any of the episode pages and you'll find a link at the bottom of the page. Until next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A salesman went to visit one of his clients, and as he walked through the store, he saw a dog cleaning up the office. As he watched, the dog vacuumed the room and emptied the rubbish bins. The dog looked up and saw the man watching him and said to him, "Don't mind me, this is all part of my job." The man looked at the dog in amazement and said, "Whoa, a talking dog! Does your boss know about this?" "Please don't tell him," begged the dog. "If he finds out, he'll have me answering the phones as well."